You're ready for this, the Bell and Pollock Legal Show, the only show of its kind. We're ready for you. We're firing on all pistons today. Everybody's here, present and accounted for. 303-713-8255-713-8255. You can call us, and we're going to answer your question on any legal subject, even though we're injury attorneys. And we've been doing this for a long time. We're glad to do it. 303-713-8255. So, and don't forget about our website, championsofthepeople.com. It's an information-littered website. But importantly, if you're in a hurry, just go to our homepage, championsofthepeople.com. If you've been in an accident, and you must either do one of two things. You know, there's two buttons there. You either push the button and listen to our 30-minute show on what you need to know before you have the first phone call with the adjuster, what you can ask the adjuster, what they can ask you, if they send you a, quote, few forms. What do you do? And by the way, when you're talking to the adjuster for the at-fault party, that liability company adjuster, what are you going to do when they say, well, you know, I'm trying to help you. We can't help you unless you sign our forms. Can't help you unless you fill out our questionnaire. Do you want me to adjust the claim or not? What are you going to do? Go to our website, championsofthepeople.com. You're going to find out. And if you're in a hurry, the second button is for you. Why? Because we have a quick checklist that you can download, print, as to what you need to know before you talk to the adjuster. A quick checklist, PDF, and it's easy to read. And, by the way, what can you ask the adjuster? What should you do? Instead of it just being a one-way street, what can you ask for? And you'll see if they're going to give it to you. Okay, today we're going to talk about the doctrine of attractive nuisance. What is a doctrine? That's a legal doctrine. Those are the magical legal words, attractive nuisance. What does it mean? Brad, what do we got?
Well, we're talking about something very special that deals with children. It deals with children under the age of 14. And there's also a special classification for age 14 to 18. But when we're talking under the age of 14, and everybody needs to listen up as we come to the holidays, especially Halloween. Christmas can also be an attractive nuisance. We have our top 10, Gary, of what we believe it is, and we'll get into that as we go. But what we talk about in attractive nuisance is something that attracts a child, a person under the age of 14, a natural attraction that would cause that person and that child to naturally be attracted to the particular thing that's on the property, that's on somebody's property. In Colorado, we have a pretty strict Premises Liability Act. The legislature itself said the whole purpose of the Premises Liability Act was, in essence, to make it harder for lawsuits against businesses and landowners is broadly defined. You're going to need to listen to our show that Gary talked about to know what that means. But it's a pretty strict situation and set of laws makes it hard for you to bring your case. And in Colorado, we say the whole reason is because we want to encourage business. We want to keep insurance premiums low. But there's a special classification when it comes to children under the age of 14 that protects children on attractive nuisances. And it's a special classification that works really well. It doesn't matter if the child is a trespasser. It doesn't matter if the child has been invited onto the property. It doesn't matter what you've done. If you've got an attractive nuisance, something that's a danger to a child and is inclined to attract that child onto the property and to that nuisance, then you've got some liability that you've got to address. And, you know, we're getting into our top 10, Gary, but Halloween is right in there.
Right. You know, it deals with, common sense-wise, something that would attract, that's why it's called attractive nuisance, something that would allure a young child onto a piece of property and become injured or killed. And so you have to be especially careful. And Brad just said the magical words, even if they're trespassing. You say, I can't believe it. I mean, they climbed over my fence in the backyard, and they went into this hole, or they went into the swimming pool that I drained. There was no water in it. I can't believe it. So it depends. It's fact-driven. But if something that allures a child, and under 14, they're presumed, the law says they're presumed not to be competent to understand, analyze, and have the cognition to be able to differentiate between what's dangerous and not. A good example, you know, are refrigerators that are abandoned. Maybe and appliances, and children play hide and seek. So it's something that allures a child onto land or onto property that is dangerous, that the landowner either knows it's dangerous or should know it's dangerous. So, Brad, let's talk about Halloween, because let's tee it up on that. That's coming right up. And those are all kinds of attractive nuisances, and we might get to some of our others on our top 10 list, but that's all kinds of attractive nuisances. So what should a homeowner do? What do they look for coming up on Halloween?
Sure. And when you're talking Halloween, a lot of times it's fun to put out certain things on the grass and have certain things. First of all, remember, in Halloween, you're in essence asking kids and children, many of them under the age of 14, hopefully a lot of them are chaperoned with their parents, but you're asking them to come up onto your property. You're asking them to come to your door. You've got your light on, and it's candy time. And we all know that if the light's on, you're in essence saying it's okay to come up. If the light's off, then they're not supposed to come up to the door. That's usually the universal signal that we have for Halloween. So what happens when you leave the light on and you have some other thing going on in your yard? And what could that thing be? Maybe you've got something that jumps out and scares them. Well, you've got to think about, what if I put something out that jumps out and scares them and can cause them to go somewhere or run or do something, and I've got some dangers in my yard. I've got other dangers. What if I've got the monsters and the cats and the skeletons and everything in my yard with wires that are holding them up? And I've created trip wires, in essence, that the kids are going to be tripping over and could get hurt. Is what if I've got bushes or some kind of objects in my yard that if kids fell into them, that it would hurt them? And I've also now put out one of those cauldrons with dry ice and stuff coming up and smoke coming up and a witch that jumps at them and stuff. What if I've got just a cauldron with that dry ice, and I get a kid who reaches their hand in and grabs one of those pieces of dry ice? They can burn their hands. It can injure them. These are all different things on Halloween. What if I've got stuff that I'm going to have them focusing on as they come up to the door to watch those specific things rather than watch how they're walking up to my door? And I've got steps on my doors, or I've got railings that they need to use, and I've got things that the children need to use. These are all different things that can blend into an attractive nuisance and could be, make you responsible for stuff you never even realized that potential injury.
You know, what does attractive nuisance doctrine hold? It holds that it makes you liable. It makes you responsible. You know, and in my neighborhood at Halloween one time, I saw somebody had a complete, beautiful, haunted house in the front yard. And that's okay as long as you can make it safe. All right? And so, and everybody said, "What? Come on, Gary, Brad, you're kidding me. This is Halloween." Well, it is Halloween, but this is the law that we're talking about. And we're just talking about one example, Halloween. You can have examples where there's no holiday at all. We have something that attracts a young child, a person that under 14 years old, they're presumed not to be competent to understand the realities and the consequences of the dangers, right? If they're between 14 and 18, the law says there's a rebuttable presumption. What's that? They're presumed to be competent to understand the dangers, which changes the law, right? Changes how the law applies if they're presumed to be competent. But that's a rebuttable presumption, because you might have somebody that's 16 years old that is not capable of understanding, does not have the cognition to understand the dangerous conditions. So this whole area deals with man-made or artificial structures or activities on the land. Okay, you listen to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. You can call us 303-713-8255, 303-713-8255. We're here to answer your questions. We got our lines open. We're standing by. We got everybody, the entire crew is here for you. Our website, championsofthepeople.com. And don't forget about our show today at 10 o'clock, our one-hour injury show, Champions of the People Injury Show, 1 hour starting at 10 o'clock on 850 KOA. Bell and Pollock, we'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back. Fasten your seatbelt. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show. We are injury attorneys in our day lives. This show is for you on any legal subject. I don't care if it's landlord, tenant, estates, wills, nuisances. We're here to answer your questions, solve your problems. You can call us right now at 303-713-8255, 713-8255. We just have a second edition of our first book we ever wrote. Now it's published. You can have a hard copy of it. That book's title was Don't Get Hurt Twice in the Same Accident, Once in the Accident, and Again on the Insurance Claim. You know, that's a long name, right? Don't Get Hurt Twice in the Same Accident, Once in the Accident, and Again on the Insurance Claim. And so we got a second edition, revised, updated book. You can get it on our website, championswiththepeople.com. You can also get a hard copy by calling our law firm, or you can call the studio right now. Give Kevin your address. We'll send you a hard copy. Today at 10 o'clock is our one-hour Champions of the People injury show on KOA, 8:50 a.m. We're talking about premises liability. You know, what if you go into a big box store and merchandise falls on you? What if you go into a grocery store and they got all kinds of dangerous conditions and you know, they say, well, there's something on the floor. And you say, well, they shouldn't have to clean that. I mean, it just happened. We didn't know that. We, the grocery store, we didn't know that. What are their duties and obligations? What if you're injured? What if you, if product falls on you, falls in your head in a big box store, right? What if there's a dangerous condition? What are there, if there are activities? How does this really work? What if you, what about the parking lot? What about ice? All this we cover today on our KOA Champions of the People injury show, and we give you all the details, the ins and outs, so it's 1 hour every Saturday morning. So let's talk about a little bit more about this attractive nuisance doctrine, because it can, some of our examples, and we've got the top 10 examples, but another one that allures young children. I mean, children come in these places, and the landowner is charged with responsibility. It's a different responsibility for children. It's a different responsibility for children under the age of 14. They are presumed not to be competent to have the cognition and understanding to determine what's dangerous, to protect themselves, and obviously the younger they are, the worse it gets. But let's talk about construction sites. That's a huge situation, and there's a balancing interest because the contractor says, my gosh, what do you want me to do? What would you like me to do? Then the child is lured onto there, and they get injured or killed.
And some of this is for you to understand that when you're near a construction site, if you're living near a construction site, to all the parents out there, if you have children who are younger in age, you've got to watch it. That's a new danger that's around your house. If you're living somewhere and there's some empty lots, and all of a sudden you see them coming in and start to build homes on those empty lots, recognize that your children under age of 14 are identified by law as being attracted to those kind of things, and that's something that could be a danger to them. I can't think of any stage in a construction site that is not something that it attracts children. You start with them when they start digging the basement, when they start putting the foundation in, once they build the house, and or once they've got the framing up, and they've got it to a point where the framing is there and they can walk in, the children can walk in and fall through the holes into the basement and get hurt. A lot of times there's nails that are out there that can hurt them. They can climb onto a bunch of the framing or get onto the roof, and they can hurt themselves falling off that. Children climb. If they're under the age of 14 especially, and they don't apprehend or understand that danger. It's something that you have to pay attention to. Construction site falls on number 8 of my list. Number 8. And Gary, you brought up the swimming pools, and that falls on number 9. And that we're talking about swimming pools, or what I called the backyard. Not just the in-ground swimming pool, but you also talk about the swimming pool that you put up that's about 4 or 5 feet high, and you fill it up with water, and you're able to swim in your backyard. Obviously, the in-ground swimming pools are very, very dangerous and can attract children. And Gary, when you talked about discarded appliances like refrigerators and things like that, that came to number 5. That was number 5 on my list. So we've gotten 3 out of my 10 that's on my list of attractive nuisances that you've got to pay attention to. Construction sites are so many of them that are right around your neighborhood that will attract those children, and you've got to pay attention to them.
If you're the contractor, let's talk about a construction site, or if you're a landowner like Halloween, or just a landowner, you've got what might be an attractive nuisance. Those are really interesting words, aren't they? Attractive nuisance. It means a man-made structure, right? An artificial structure on your land, or an activity on your land that's going to allure a young child onto your land. And you say they're trespassing. I didn't invite them. I had a sign up that said no trespassing. It doesn't matter, right? It just doesn't matter, because you're charged with a duty. It's a heightened duty. And this is a whole exception carved out of our premises liability law. So you're talking about when you go to a big box store or a grocery store, or you're shopping, or a shopping mall, there's a dangerous condition. Somebody spilled something. you know, once you get into these cases and they say, well, we're not charged with that responsibility. We're not charged in a shopping mall to have things, people drop them on the floor. We're not charged. Sure, they are. Sure they are. And when you ask them and when you look at their procedures, when you finally can get their procedures and force them legally to give you their procedures say sometimes in capital bold print, you be aware, you make regular checks every 15 minutes in the shopping mall. You have people that go by. So they understand the duty. They deny the duty, right, initially. And then you get their documents and they're instructing their employees and they have certain designated employees to go through the shopping mall. So it's a big issue, especially with Halloween coming up. And right now, join us live is Susan from Arvada. Good morning, Susan.
Yes, I was wondering, is it still true or was it ever true that if two people that aren't married file income tax together as a couple, that they are legally married in the state of Colorado?
Okay, Susan. So under Colorado law, it's Colorado case law for you know common law marriage. There are nine factors in the seminal leading case in Colorado. Nine factors that the court looks at to determine if somebody is married. But everybody boils them down in the legal world to three factors, and they are: if you cohabit, if you live together, that's one factor. If you hold yourself out to the general public as a husband and wife, that's a second factor. And Brad's going to cover some of the nuances of how you prove that. And then number three, if you have the intent, the mutual intent to be married. So you live together, you hold yourself out to be husband and wife, and you live together. And so, Brad, but let's go through some of the nuances of how do you prove this.
Yeah, Susan, the taxes are something that's going to be looked at very seriously as far as whether or not somebody intended to be married and how they filed their taxes. It's not the end of the question. It's a beginning of the question. People can hold themselves out to be married and say they're married and filed individually. And you will go, well, and as single, and you wonder, well, how can they do that? And they may have different reasons why they're doing that on their taxes and not as head of household. And, you know, it may be a situation where they intend to be married, but they don't think for the government purposes that they can necessarily identify themselves as married because they don't have a marriage license. And some people think that. Other people, when they start getting into the documents and they start putting themselves as husband and wife on the tax returns, they put themselves down as husband and wife on insurance documents when they're talking about who the beneficiaries are and who's covered within their health insurance. Now you're getting to steps where you believe they're married. Now the question you have to ask, were they holding themselves out to be married? Did they live together? Did they cohabitate? Did they tell everybody else they were married? Or was this something that was in essence a tax fraud? Or was it in essence an insurance fraud where they were just trying to get the benefits that might be available without being able to, without actually getting married, and they just wanted to get the benefits that might have been available?
You know, it always comes up in this area because somebody says they're not married, somebody says they are common law married, and then they're going to have a divorce, and it goes through a divorce court. And these divorce judges are well tuned into what we're talking about because Brad just hit the nail on the head. Look, when you're trying to prove somebody's married, you ask for their tax returns. I don't want to give you my tax returns. Well, here we are. Now, sir, did you sign this as your tax return? Yes. To the government? Yes. Under penalty of perjury? Yes. Did you hold yourself out and check the block where you say you're husband and wife? Well, no, right here. Did you? And so, yes, the answer is yes. And then Brad also said you go to their health insurance application. Everybody knows these are the two big areas, tax returns and health insurance application. Because if you file for health insurance as a husband and wife, it's a different situation. So, Susan, I hope we're answering your questions, but let me know.
What about Section 8 housing? If two people live together and only one of them is supposed to be getting it?
Therein, you're talking about one of the things that the court needs to look at. So people say they're married for the purpose of getting Section 8 housing, and they put down the application they're married for Section 8 housing, but yet they never cohabitate. They don't live together as husband and wife. They don't hold themselves out as husband and wife. Maybe they don't even represent themselves to others as being husband and wife or being married at all. You probably have a situation where they're really not married. They didn't walk down an aisle. They didn't go to the courthouse. They didn't go get a marriage license. They didn't go to the state to get a marriage license. They didn't do any of those things that make them married. They simply said they were married for the purposes of trying to get around Section 8 or trying to get the benefits of Section 8 housing.
What if they said they that said they're not married and that they're not cohabitating, that they are.
That's just the reverse. Maybe at that point somebody wants to say they are married. Now, when they're cohabitating, people can live together without being married. Quite often you have people living together and they even ask you, are you married? And they'll go, no, we're not married. We're just living together. Because, people live together without being married all the time. The question you've got is, let's say in section, let me ask you if they have children. And even if they don't have children with each other, if they have separate children from other partners, when they take them to school, do they represent themselves to be married? When they go places and when they visit with friends, do they say they're husband and wife? Do they use the surnames? Do they use the same last name? Do they wear wedding rings? The rings that say they're married.
Hey, Susan, we got to take a break. Can you hang with us over the break? Because we got a couple more things to tell you.
Okay, thank you.
Sure, I'm gonna put you on hold, so don't go away. You're listening to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Don't forget about the show that follows our show, the Consumer Real Estate Show. Barry and Larry, very knowledgeable. They hold boot camps. You can learn a lot from them. You know, there's questions now with regard to rising rates to borrow for home mortgages. I'm sure they've got answers for those questions as well. If you're dealing with home inspections or real estate contracts or real estate issues, they're the people you can call. Their show follows our show. And today at 10 o'clock, our Champions of the People Injury Show on 850 AM KOA. We'll be right back. Here we go. Welcome to all of our listeners. We got KRDO in Colorado Springs, KRAI in Craig, Colorado, KEZZ, 94.1 FM in Steamboat Springs, and KHOW right here. Join us live is Eric from Caitlin's. Good morning, Eric.
Good morning. How are you guys doing today?
Good. What's cooking?
I got a couple of new specials. We are doing those pumpkin spice pancakes for breakfast. We talked about that a little bit last week. We are going to run that. Now, normally we change our specials up every 2 weeks, but those pumpkin spice pancakes will be here all the way through Thanksgiving. So you got plenty of time if you can't make it down this weekend to check those out. They are scratch made. They are buttermilk pancakes, and they are pumpkin spice. So that's going to be the breakfast special for at least the next 2 weeks. And our lunch special is going to be a ranch dusted and sauteed mushroom burger. That's a 6-ounce patty. We'll cook it to the temperature of your liking. Add that ranch dust on there and those sauteed mushrooms. You can always get our homemade chips or the waffle cut fries on the side, of course, with those. That will be the lunch special for the next 2 weeks. And guys, don't forget, as always, we are doing every Monday and every Friday from 11 to 2. It is the all-you-can-eat taco and burrito buffet. It is all you can eat. It actually includes a non-alcoholic beverage and the price of that. Those are scratch-made products on there as well, too, all across the board, all scratch-made, all right here in the house. That is every Monday and every Friday from 11 to 2. And, guys, we do have carafes of mimosas for $13.50. The deck, I think, is going to be okay today. Colorado weather is going to give us one more decent weekend, it looks like, at least today anyway. So we're going to have that available if you want to sit outside. Like I said, those carafes of mimosas are there. The flat screens are on. The sports are on. Tons of things to check out at Caitlin's Restaurant today, guys.
Coming down for the pumpkin spice on the
deck. They're here.
Eric, that's what I'm coming down for. Have them ready.
They're here, absolutely.
Okay,
course.
Buddy.
Eric, where are you located?
Guys, we are 4379 East Mississippi Avenue. Now, that is one block east of Colorado Boulevard, and that is in the Glendale Shopping Center. Guys, come and check us out. You'll love it every bite of the way.
See you later, Eric.
Okay, Eric, thanks a lot. Caitlin's Restaurant, you will love it every bite of the way. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock, our law firm is Bell and Pollock. This show is for you. Right before the break, we were talking to Susan about a common law marriage question and or related matters. Susan, are you still here?
Yes.
Okay, ma'am. So are we answering your question or do you have more questions? Because we're talking about common law marriage and how you prove it or maybe denying it. If you represent yourself to be husband and wife and then later in court you say that was not true, but I signed the tax return that way, I signed the health insurance form that way, then either you are married or you've committed fraud.
Okay, that was the question, I guess, is it fraud?
And you know, it's a tough question, Susan. It really is. You know, when you get into the court, just so you know, I have a case that I'm doing where we're in the Court of Appeals right now over this very issue, and it didn't come out of the marriage question. It came out of inheritance, because when you start talking about husband and wife, and one of them passes away, the question is, how does the inheritance go? Does it go to the person that says they were the spouse, or does it go to the children of the person who died, or does it have to be shared, and what happens? And, you know, you parade people in, you bring them in to testify as to, yeah, they held themselves out as married, they held themselves out as married. You talk about whether or not the tax returns have anything that shed any light on their intention. Were the tax returns and were forms being filled out for purely economic advantages, and they didn't really intend to be married? They didn't wear wedding rings. They didn't say they were husband and wife. Or maybe they did say they were husband and wife, and they did wear wedding rings, and they had reasons why they didn't fill out government forms. All that has to be looked at. If you basically have, and Susan, we've seen fraudulent marriages in a lot of different areas to allow people to stay in our country, to allow people to qualify for Section 8. They say they're not married when they really are, because of to be able to qualify. So it's almost a case by case basis. And when Gary told you there's all these factors involved, and there's some main ones, you've got to look at those factors. And then it comes down to really just somebody making a decision, if it comes down to that situation.
The other thing, Susan, I can't tell you as injury attorneys how many times we've seen over the years. Okay, so somebody, they have a couple. So one of the couple, let's say the husband or the man dies, and now there's a statute in effect. But let's say he was wrongfully killed by an accident. Now who's going to receive the money? There's going to be an action for a wrongful death action. Who's going to receive the money? Now, suddenly, maybe the woman says, well, wait a minute, we were married, and if we're married, then I have a special relationship on the money we're going to recover. So now they're going to come out of the woodwork. Now we're going to deny we've been married for 20 years, 25 years, but the husband, the man is killed. Now the woman is going to say we're married, or vice versa. It doesn't matter. Just one example. There are other examples. If there's a will or no will, somebody's injured, somebody dies in a car accident, a truck accident, a bike accident, somebody's a hit and run. This issue comes to us, Bell and Pollock, all the time. So, but the one thing I want to do, Susan, before we say goodbye to you, is I want to get rid of this myth. There's all these myths in the law sometimes. And in this area, the myth was, well, you got to be together for 7 years. Or no, you don't. No, you don't. You have to fill the three requirements. You have to live together, meaning cohabitation. You have to have the intent to be married, both of you, and you have to hold yourself out as husband and wife. Any other questions, Susan, that we can do for you?
No, thank you very much.
Ma'am, thank you for your call. We appreciate it. All right, you listen to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. You can call us, 303-713-8255. We're here for you. Join us live on KHOW, Steve from Denver. Good morning, Steve.
Oh, good morning, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call. I have a question. I have a rental property in Denver, and a couple, I think they're brothers and sisters, they moved in about 3-4 months ago, and they said somebody, their family owns some kind of a business. They're going to help or pay their rent. And now this LLC sent me a W-9 form. What I do with that? But I don't have no paperwork with them or anything, just a couple of verbal agreements that
so they might. You, Steve, you have a rental property, you rent it out to these people, and now did they sign the lease individually?
Yes.
No LLC on the lease, right?
No.
And then all of a sudden you get a W-9 from an LLC for you to fill out pertaining to these tenants?
Yes.
Wow.
Well,
I don't see any connection. I don't see it.
I don't either. I didn't know them. I just know the name that the lady requested my address. She said she's going to pay the rent every first of the month. Okay. And that's it. I don't even know her last name.
Well, you know, commercial payers of rents and royalties, normally they generate a 1099 to the landlord, and to generate a 1099, you got to do a W-9, because
right.
The W-9 is what leads to the 1099. Residential, you know, I don't see that being something that has to be done. I don't see that being at all. And in this case, I specifically don't see it, because your lease is not with the company.
I don't either.
Your lease is with an individual. And I don't know why you would give a company a 1099 for a lease with an individual.
Yeah, so it's a W-9.
Or a W-9. I'm sorry. I don't know why they would give him a W-9.
No, I told them just that I'm not planned to do it. So.
Well, you know, you can just write them back, or you don't even have to do anything, but you can write them back and say, have a nice day. You know, your issue brings to mind. I used to have a ink pad with red ink on it, and I had a rubber stamp that I can't tell you what was on the stamp. Sometimes I stamped it on things and sent it back to people.
But you, in this case, obviously what they're trying to do is they're trying to put it in a situation where they can write it off. And right. they want to write off the individual's rent. And, on something like that, I think you then have to make a simple decision. If when you tell them no, they may come back and say, well, we want the lease in the name of the company. And the question is, do you want a lease to that company, or are you leasing an individual and it is guaranteed by the individual? And if you're leasing to a company, then maybe at that point, 1099s become and W-9s become something that's in the ballgame, sure. But not necessarily.
Well, but watch this one, Steve. If they did what Brad said, Brad made a great point there. If they did what Brad said, right, and if they said, well, we want to write it off, or we want the LLC to be the tenant, this is a residence. And if somebody's doing a business in a residence, it might violate the zoning standards because a lot of people can't do that. So you might be already just inadvertently, involuntarily participating in allowing them to run an illegal business out of a residential property. Wow.
Right.
I'd say no, Steve.
No. No, plus I'll have an existing lease till next May or June or whatever, so I don't have to change anything.
Correct. You don't have to do anything.
No,
you
don't. You didn't rent to a business.
Yeah, I have one more question about tape recording people.
Yeah.
I have a big issue. I have a rental property in Hawaii also, and have a big issue the last couple of weeks. These people lie up and down.
they lie to you.
Yeah. They want to use the $2,000 deposit for last month's rent. And
yeah. Well, but what's your tape recording question?
But can I record a conversation?
Okay, can you hang with us till after the break?
Sure.
That's a great question because you're going to be fascinated by the answer, I think. You stick with us. You're listening to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show, the only show of its kind. Today at 10 o'clock and every Saturday at 10 o'clock in the morning, 10 to 11, the one-hour Champions of the People Injury Show. Today we're talking about what if you're injured as what we call a premises liability case. What if you're in a big box store shopping? What if you're in a shopping mall and you're injured? What if you're in the parking lot and you're injured? What if you're into a tenant's business in a shopping mall and there's a dangerous condition and you're injured? Who's responsible? The landlord, the tenant? What do you do? You can listen to our show, our website, championsofthepeople.com, right? We'll be right back. Welcome back. Bell and Pollock, Gary Bell, Brad Pollock. We're here for you. 303-713-8255. Today at 10 o'clock, our Champions of the People Injury Show on KOA. Right before the break, we were talking about to Steve. Steve, you with us?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so you got these issues on this Hawaii people. They're lying, and can you tape record them? Brad, what do we got?
Steve, Hawaii is a one-party consent state, and Colorado is a one-party consent state.
Oh, good.
Which means, and federal law allows one-party consent as long as the state does. So those are the three jurisdictions you have to worry about. Now, every time you go to record somebody, you got to find out if the recording involves an out-of-state party. Then you've got to find out if the state that they're in allows one-party consent. And when I talk to one-party consent, so everybody knows, it just means only one party in the conversation has to give consent to have the recording. And so if you're doing, Steve, your own recording and you've given consent to have the recording, it can be done without the other party's knowledge.
Right.
And that's fine. Yes, you can. And Steve, you didn't ask this, and I want everybody listening to understand that doesn't mean a spouse or an ex-spouse can record the conversation between their ex-spouse and the children, because they're not a party to the conversation. So don't be doing that. Everybody pay attention. Don't be doing those recordings. That takes a whole different area of questioning and discussion.
No, but my kids grown up.
Yeah, you want to do it in a rental capacity. Right. And so in a rental capacity, as long as you're the party to the conversation and you've given consent to record yourself, go at it.
Okay, very good. Thank you very much.
You bet.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Steve.
Thanks for the call, Steve.
Thank you. Have a good day.
All right. Thank you very much. All right, so the Bell and Pollock Legal Show, right? Our books are on our website. We have 6 books written. The most recent book we wrote was the Colorado Definitive Guideline on Car Insurance. We have picture examples of deck pages of what you need to have your own declaration page. And if anybody wants my own personal declaration page to my own car insurance policies, I will give it to you. Just call either the studio or our law firm, and I'll send it to you. I do it all the time. Join us now is Robert from Aurora. Good morning, Robert.
Gentlemen, thank you so much for your entertaining program and also educational program. I appreciate learning what you've taught us. My friend Laurie and I have been friends. She's a senior citizen. We've been friends since 1989, I believe. She was my travel agent. Her daughter recently sent an email for me not to call her and not to visit her. Well, I've never had time to visit Laurel, but I do call her. She requests that I call her. She says the only people in her nursing home are crazies, and she enjoys the mental stimulation of my calling her. We are both organists. She was a church organist. I'm a classical organist. So we discuss organs and organ music and Bach and stuff like that. Must I obey her daughter's email that orders me not to call her or visit her?
Okay. Does your daughter have any, I mean, does that daughter, not your daughter, does that daughter have any kind of control, power of attorney?
Yes. She's her court-appointed,
personal representative, guardian, conservator.
Guardian.
Yeah.
Thank you, guardian.
No problem. Okay, so she's the guardian, so she does have some say. And before Brad gets to your answer, I've got to tell you, you're an organist. Sometime I buy you a cup of coffee, and I would tell you my childhood story of I drove my piano teacher crazy, and that's a whole different story because I could never learn how to do that very well. So, Brad, what do you got?
Well, in something like this, the question comes up is, you know, does she have the authority under the power of attorney to control and direct and say there can't be calls? And if she's a conservator and guardian, she might be able to do that. And if she's doing it for the safety of the ward, and that'd be the lady you're wanting to talk to, then you may be in a situation where when she makes that statement, don't make any more calls, do not call, she might be able to enforce that with a restraining order. Normally, when you don't want somebody to call and they continue to make calls, you get a restraining order. Maybe there's some kind of claim of harassment, but it doesn't sound like you're in a situation where you're harassing anybody. It just sounds like it's a situation where you're not even certain why she doesn't want the call anymore, the calls, right?
She stated that my calls have upset Laurel and have also interrupted her activities, which is she has no activities.
She has no activities.
Laurel wants me to call her because she is so bored to death being in this nursing facility, and she asks me to call her, and so I do as she asks.
Okay, well, Robert, before we go further on your question, have you told this guardian, and would be nice in an email or in writing, you know, please explain to me further why, because she wants me to call her, she wants the interchange, and you've told her that? What did she say?
She said, replied, no calls, no visits. May I send you the email? Would
yes.
that be possible?
Absolutely.
Yeah, this is going to be something we're going to have to explore more off the air. Because the first question I've got is, does she even have that authority or that ability? The guardianship, does it allow them to make decisions as to who you can communicate with? And or is it a guardianship or conservatorship where it governs and controls where they're going to live and how you're going to deal with the assets and those type things? And does it really bar communications between the ward and outside parties? Because obviously, if you get a guardianship that starts barring communications between a ward and outside parties, you leave a potential opening for abuse. And that has to be looked at as far as what's happening, because you leave if somebody can shut down all communications and, in essence, make a person a shut-in with no outside communications from the outside world at all, why they are acting as conservator or guardian, or they have a power of attorney, and they also are acting in a situation where they would be inheriting, it sounds like as a daughter they would, the estate, and they can control what happens, you've got something that's fraught for potential danger there to the ward itself.
Well, I tell you what, you know, you might, I mean, here come the lawyers. We're going to try to help you, but here come the lawyers. I'd be writing, and I'll be glad to try to help you. I'd be writing the guardian letter or communication saying, explain to me the following and explain to me what power of authority you have. Give me your guardianship papers and your appointment. You may not even really be the guardian. I would like to take a look at that. I don't think you're acting in her best interest. And just the brief time we've talked to you on the radio, Robert, you seem very genuine, very honest with integrity and caring about this person. So I don't get it. But yes, if you don't mind, I'll put you on hold. Kevin can get your information. We'll call you, give you the email address. I don't think he knows our emails. I'll be glad to give it to you, and we can go from there. I'll be glad to help you.
Great. Thank you so much for Laurel's sake.
Robert, thanks for the call. I'll put you on hold, okay? Give Kevin the information.
Thank you.
All right. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock, our website, championsofthepeople.com. We have 6 books there that are published. Workers' Comp, Injured on the Job, we have a book for it. Hit and Run, Cowards of the Street, we have a book for it. Don't Get Hurt Twice in the Same Accident, Once in the Accident and Again on the Insurance Claim, we have a book for it. The Definitive Colorado Guideline on Colorado Car Insurance with picture examples, arrows pointing to the important language in the deck sheet, important language in the policy, making it very easy and simple and not legalese. We've got a book for it, right? And we got a book for Legal Game Plan. We trademark protected our concept of Legal Game Plan for you. And they're all free. You can get an ebook free on our website, championsofthepeople.com. You can get a hard copy by calling the studio right now or calling our law firm or just coming by our law firm. We will welcome you. Bell and Pollock, Champions of the People for a reason. We'll see you next week. Man, I never will forget the way the moonlight shined upon her head.